From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. When you look at the Amazon review for my next guest's book, it says, Deep White Cover is a unique and timely story that will entertain as well as challenge readers from across the political spectrum to reexamine their views on immigration issues. And my guest is Joel Barrows. He's the author. He's an Iowa District Court judge who regularly oversees both criminal and civil trials and a former federal prosecutor. He has argued before the United States Court of Appeals, and his cases have been as diverse as white-collar crime, environmental crime, cyber crime, child exploitation, narcotics, firearms offenses, immigration crimes, bank robbery, and on and on. And it's a big pleasure to have Your Honor on the show tonight. How are you doing, sir?
Good, Dane. It's good to be with you. I appreciate the invitation to come on the show, and let's feel free to stick with Joel tonight and save the Your Honor business.
Well, you know what I do for a living besides this, and it's kind of ingrained in me a little bit, so I will try.
I understand.
I will try. Listen, how do you go from a prosecutor to a judge to an author?
Well, I was a prosecutor for about 18 years. I loved the job, loved the work, loved chasing the bad guys. After a while, I thought it was time to try something different, and a lot of people had encouraged me to try for a judgeship, and so I took a run at it, and the governor was kind enough to appoint me, so here I am. As far as the author thing goes, my wife first encouraged me to take a shot at writing, and I thought about it for a while, and one day I had an idea for a book, and I went up, and the next thing I knew, I had five or six pages of outline, and away I went.
Joel Barrows is here talking about his new book, Deep White Cover, and it's from Crime Street Press. And there's a link in the show notes on how to get that. Now, it's interesting. We'll get into the book in a little bit. It's being the press release says it's going to be a first of many. And do you know what you got yourself into here? You got a lot of work ahead of you.
Well, I do. Your good friend Stacy Dietrich, of course, is my publisher, and Stacy and my agent thought that this book had the potential for a series, so they encouraged me to come up with an idea for the next four books in the series, and I sat and penned that down, and they decided they liked it and stuck it in the back of the book. So, yeah, now I'm kind of stuck. I think the next 7-8 years of writing are already charted for me.
When you talk about Stacy, yeah, she is a good friend of the program, and also a hardworking author and law enforcement officer. And how do you take your experience in prosecutions, law enforcement, and put it on the page, so to speak, when it comes to how you want the reader to be able to pick up the book and relate to it, I guess, is the best way.
Well, obviously, you want to give them the sense of being an insider. I try to make it as realistic as possible. Obviously, I'm drawing from the experience of my own cases and the friendships that I've had with many law enforcement officers and agents over the years, and learning the lingo and how investigations work. And, you know, as a federal prosecutor, it's a little bit different than a state prosecutor. You're involved in the investigations right from the onset, and you have a much more hands-on role. So, you know, that afforded me the opportunity to learn a lot more about investigation, investigative techniques, that sort of thing. So I try to bring that all to bear in the book, and like I said, give the reader the sense of being sort of an insider.
Joel Barrows is here. We're talking about his new book, Deep White Cover, from Crime Street Press. Our good friend Stacy Dietrich is part of that. Now, immigration. Geez, all you got to do is turn the television on or read the newspaper. I don't know, people read newspapers anymore. Or they look at the internet or whatever you do. The immigration status is a mess. In fact, I did a story tonight that will air in the next couple of days about how ICE in Houston is looking for 40,000 pairs of men's underwear because they have so many detainees there, and they're opening the floodgates, so to speak. Why the topic of immigration?
Well, I thought it would be an interesting context in which to set this book. Obviously, it's an issue in which everyone has an interest and has an opinion. When I was an assistant U.S. attorney, I became aware of some incidents at the border where these vigilante groups had formed and were policing the border on their own. None had reached the level of violence that my fictional organization in the book had, but I thought, what an interesting context. And in the book, my group sort of combines with the white supremacist element, sort of an Aryan Nation type of element, and they take things to sort of their logical or illogical extreme. The book's really just context, but it does sort of force people to re-examine their views on immigration. I try to be fair to the views on all sides of the issue. My personal belief is that we have to secure the border before we can do anything else. But I just, like I said, I thought it would be an interesting context.
Judge Joel Barrows is here and talking about his new book. Judge, when you sit down, when you sit down and you say you sat down, you wrote those first five pages, was it tough to stop? You wanted to keep going and going and going like the Energizer Bunny?
Sometimes it's easy, sometimes it isn't. You know, this book actually was written in probably a year and 3 or 4 months, which is pretty quick for me. In a way, it felt like it wrote itself. It just sort of flowed out of me. Obviously, there's days when you go up to write, and it's a little bit more of a chore, but I always found this one pretty easy to write. I thought that it would be fun to do a book that really examined what an undercover agent goes through. I didn't really see much out there that did that or did it well. I also didn't really see anything that involved ATF, and I had worked with a lot of ATF agents in my career, and they're doing some of the best undercover work out there. So I thought that would be interesting. And as you're aware, the book also, it's sort of a dual-track story. It follows the undercover agent that goes into this organization, but it also follows a cooperator who has to be placed in witness security, and how his life changes when he goes into the witness security program.
David Ward, how did you come up with the character?
Well, he's a compilation of many dedicated law enforcement officers and special agents that I've worked with over the years, of course. And he's not based on any one or two individuals, just characteristics drawn from a number of people. And, you know, obviously I was in law enforcement for a long time, and as you know very well, Dana, the vast, vast majority of people in law enforcement are very dedicated, want to do the best job that they can. You know, unfortunately, in the media, what you see portrayed is the one or two individuals who've gone bad or made a mistake. You know, I want people to understand that the vast majority of people who are out there are very interested in doing a good job and are really putting their lives on the line every single day, particularly in the undercover context, which, as you know, is extremely dangerous.
It's difficult in law enforcement to have a normal kind of life. It's it takes a special kind of man or woman to be married to a cop, and because of your hours, because of what you do, and because of the psyche you have when you go to work and do your thing, whether it's undercover or you're the cop on the beat. How do you portray that in the book without giving away too much for David Ward?
Well, I guess I just try to show what motivates Ward, what drives him forward. I don't want to make him, he's not a cardboard cutout character. He's not Superman or anything like that. I want him to be a human being. I just try to make him the law enforcement officers that you and I have known throughout our career, and just give people a real sense of the sense of duty and honor, I guess, that motivates so many of those people.
It's interesting when you write a book like this, Joel. And Joe and Mary Sixpack are walking through the bookstore or online looking at the Kindle or whatever you call it. I got to get more tech savvy here. Because you can get that from Amazon and other places. What about that when they pick up the book and hold it in their hand is going to grab them right away and say, hey, this is interesting. I think I'm going to take this. I pay for it, obviously.
Well, I think that my publisher's excellent cover art hopefully will be one of the thing that draws their eye.
You bet.
But I think the thing that people will really be interested in is the undercover aspect of the story and the witness security prong. Those are things that always seem to capture people's interest. And, you know, here they go at parallel tracks in the story. Both the David Ward character and the cooperator who goes into the witness security program are really forced to live a lie, in a sense, but for the purposes of the greater good. And I just think it's really interesting to see that the things that they're forced to encounter and how they play that out in those dual tracks.
You know, you mentioned the media earlier and how they portray law enforcement officers and the immigration aspect of the story altogether. It's either left or it's right. There's no real in-between, or at least it's tough to find that. But when you, as an author, and of course you're working on your second book, or you're looking at your second book, you're researching, how much can you rely on what you see or what you hear in the media to kind of point you in the right direction for your next story?
Well, I rely a lot, obviously, on my experience as a prosecutor. I really don't draw from media sources that much when I'm doing a story. You have to a degree, obviously. None of us are an expert on everything, but you do have to write what you know, and that's what I'm trying to do. So I go to outside media sources for historical tidbits to make it authentic, or geographical things, that sort of thing, in terms of the operation of a law enforcement investigation. That's the stuff I know, so I'm mostly drawn from my own experience there. I've had enough experience with the media to know that there can be a great deal of inaccuracy. You can't rely on it. At one point in my career, I was the intake attorney for a large metropolitan county attorney's office, and I dealt with all the media inquiries and had a pretty good sense of all of the crimes that were going on in that metro area. And then I would read about them in the paper, and it was disturbing to me that, you know, a very high percentage of the time, only a third to a half of what I was reading was accurate. And I understand those people have a job to do and that they're under, tremendous pressure and deadlines and that sort of thing. But particularly in a news cycle now that just runs 24/7, 365, with the pressure to get things out faster and faster and faster, I think accuracy has just gone down as a result of that.
Yeah, it's gone by the wayside for sure. The book is Deep White Cover, a new book by my guest Joel Barrows. You know, the public has a fascination with these sorts of stories, and I think you'll do very well with your series of books, whether it has to do with, you know, undercover weapons. It is all in the book, narcotics, obviously, the immigration, bikers, all that sort of stuff. Let's go now from the media to Hollywood and how sometimes, you know, that element is propped up by Hollywood, and people are idolizing the drug smugglers, and they're idolizing the weapon smugglers, and they're trying to make that bad guy look like the good guy. How do you counter that when you are an author trying to write a story and get people to see the real picture, so to speak?
Well, all you can do is give them the reality of it. You know, as I've said, you know, most of the people that do this job are driven by duty and honor and are interested in doing a good job, and all you can really do is portray that in the book. But, you know, I also try to portray the bad guys in a realistic way that makes people understand that, look, this is not glamorous. You know, the mob is not glamorous. These hate groups are not glamorous. They're not fighting for any sort of rights or anything like that. They're about hate. The mob is about crime. They're selfish individuals who victimize society. They're not heroes. They're not glamorous. They're not somebody that should be idolized. In my book, they're portrayed for what they are. I agree with you. You see too much of that in the media now, and I think it's played out sort of in the gangster rap context. You know, there's been a lot of bad side effects for society because of it.
A question on social media now. We've gone from the news cycle to Hollywood to now internet. Everything's out there, Facebook and Twitter and all these things. How do you compete with that as an author? Because it's such a huge conglomerate of, well, there's a lot of good things on the internet, but there's also a lot of garbage out there, too.
Boy, it's tough. You know, there's so many things vying for an individual's attention. And I think people today want things with immediacy. And, you know, you hope people are still as interested in books and longer stories like this. I think most people appreciate the fact that when you take a story like this and you really develop it over 330 or 40 pages, it's a much more fulfilling story and gives you a much better sense of the characters. But you're right, there's just so many things to compete with. I think one of the things that you have to do as an author, certainly in terms of marketing your work, is to get out there on social media and, you know, let people know that it's available. Obviously, a lot of people are reading now on a Kindle or on a Nook, and that's a big focus of Stacy's publishing enterprise, and I think rightly so. That's where a lot of people are reading. I think that, in fact, has taken off much more so than the traditional publishing industry was prepared to deal with. So you got to play along with it to an extent, but you're also sort of an alternative.
Just a couple of questions left. Joel Barrows is here, the author of Deep White Cover. It's a new book from Crime Street Press. It'll be a series of books, and I suggest you get out there and get it. There's a link in the show notes. Where we look at the system itself, and you as a prosecutor, as a judge, me as a talk show host, and as a police officer for over 30 years now, we look at the system. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it favors the bad guys, sometimes it protects the victim. In your books and in your writing, you know, I'll never forget interviewing Chris Darden, the prosecutor who asked OJ to try the glove on. And some of the comments he made on my program about how that affected everything because of media, even back in 1994 or 95, whenever that was, how that one mistake turned that whole case. Yeah, there were a lot of other things, but how that one little perception, how do you do that now with a series of books to make sure that that perception keeps the people interested?
Well, I try to keep it both traditional and modern. Mostly it's just about telling a good story, but you know, I also try to incorporate into the book modern technology, the way that it's used in an investigation. People are, you know, pretty savvy about that sort of thing. You better know your details when you're putting something like this together, because if you don't, you sure enough are going to hear about it.
Yeah.
From somebody. So I try to do that to keep it interesting, but ultimately it's about good storytelling and it's about the message. And I think that the best stories not only keep you engaged with the storyline and the characters, but they also teach you something. And one of the things that I hope in writing this book, given my background, is that people see where I'm coming from, and they think when they're reading this, you know, this probably really is the way it is. And, you know, that they do have that sense of being an insider when they're reading the story.
Well, it's a fascinating book, Deep White Cover, a novel by Joel Barrows. More to come in the future. When will we be looking at number two? I suppose Stacy's already driving you nuts about that.
Well, she's not driving me nuts, but I do get asked about it more from the people who've read the book, which is very gratifying. And I'm about a quarter of the way through that, and the next book is going to be called Deep Green Cover. And in that, Special Agent Ward will infiltrate the eco-terrorist movement. And hopefully people will find that interesting as well.
Great to hear from you. Thank you for coming on the show. You're welcome here anytime. I'd love to talk to you about your next book and other topics. And hopefully we can do that again real soon. Again, the book is Deep White Cover, a novel by Joel Barrows from Crime Street Press. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dana. Thanks for having me on.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Joel Barrows. And Stacy Dietrich is, and I hope you're listening, Stace. I don't throw out compliments too much. Yes, I do. You're a sweetheart, and you got yourself a good author here, and it's going to be a hit for sure. We're going to take a break, and we're going to be right back here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Okay, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name is Dana Pretzer. Isn't it fantastic to have a judge, a district court judge, a former prosecutor, come in and write stories, fictional, although based on true stories about undercover police officers, undercover agents. For many years, and we continue to hear just negative stories about law enforcement. We hear stories about bad cops. Again, I've talked about Drew Peterson many times. And until it takes the death of an officer or officers like in Moncton, New Brunswick, or Las Vegas, or anywhere across the world, do we hear positive stories about law enforcement? Well, the men and women in law enforcement that are out there protecting your life by putting their life on the line every day, there's a lot of good stories, and the majority of them are fantastic, excellent people who sacrifice a lot so you can have your freedom. Military people, EMS, fire services, you name it. And isn't it great to have a book like this? And again, it's from Crime Street Press, Deep White Cover by Joel Barrows. Click on the link in the show notes. Go on to Amazon. Get the paperback. Get the Kindle version. And stay tuned for more books from him. Are you a fan of classic television like I am? You know, there's a lot of crap on TV these days that you turn and, you know, the 500-channel universe, and you flip around from this show to that show to this show, and you wonder, geez, is there anything ever going to be on that's half decent? Well, the TV lands and the MeTVs and the other stations that are out there where you can watch classic TV are a big saving grace for me. Have a bad day, come home and watch an old show from the 50s, 60s, 70s, and you'll walk away feeling good, because a lot of those stars we're losing. We don't have them around anymore, but we still have them around on videotape. One of my favorites is I Love Lucy, Lucille Ball, Desi Arnaz. The show went on forever, the Lucy-Desi Comedy Hour, and Lucy went on for many, many years doing her comedic genius in television and movies. And, of course, Desi Arnaz is the Cuban band leader. Well, there's one person, believe it or not, from the I Love Lucy series that's still around. His name's Keith Thibodeau. I encourage you to click on the link in the show notes. There's a little YouTube video of Keith playing the drums. He played Little Ricky on I Love Lucy, and Keith and I sat down to talk about that. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. You have a bad day? I had a bad day last week. I came home and I was flipping around the TV channels, and a show that's been on since the early 1950s and continues on today is I Love Lucy, and I sat back, watched it, and I walked away, and I was feeling a lot better. And how do you go wrong with programming like that? Keith Thibodeau is here. He was Little Ricky on the show, and it's a big kick to have him today to talk about what he's doing now and those days of I Love Lucy. Welcome, Keith.
Thank you very much, Dana. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's a big pleasure. Tell us a little bit about your time with Lucy and Desi. How old were you? How long did it last?
Well, when I was signed to the I Love Lucy show, or Desi Lou Studios, it was when I turned 5 years old, 1956, and it was for a four-year contract. Actually, I think that's right. It's been so many years now. But I was on for 4 years with the Lucy-Desi format, with the I Love Lucy, and then also the Lucy Desi Comedy Hour, if some of your listeners will remember that. And that was part of my business until they divorced in 1960, when in the last episode was filmed and they got divorced and the show ended. And then I went on to do a few other things in Hollywood before I returned back to the South, in southern United States, in Mississippi, actually Louisiana.
And you spent some time with Andy Griffith Show too, didn't you?
Yeah, right after that. That's what I was mentioning. Yeah, I did the Andy Griffith Show, which is a great pleasure to do, and it was fun to do. And I got to know Ron Howard, and was good friends with him on the set. And he used to. It's funny. He used to ask the writers to write in a part for Keith so I can play with him.
Well, there you go,
Keith. It was just a fun kind of a atmosphere. We spent a lot of time, you know, playing catch outside and going to the cafeteria there at the studio and sitting next to people like Dick Van Dyke and Mary Tyler Moore and Danny Thomas, you know. So it was just, that was part of our lives and part of my play area when I was younger.
Although they live on in infamy on television and videotape and CDs and all that, sadly we're losing a lot of our television stars. We don't have the same type of quality television as we do as we did then, as we do today. In fact, commenting about today's TV, I've had Stan Livingston on the show, Keith, several times, talking about his days on My Three Sons, and we're going to talk about Bill Frawley in a few minutes. But growing up with TV the way you did, being in the industry and looking at it today, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, basically the same as what you're saying. It's the quality has. I don't know how you want to say that, but it's just cheapened, you know. I think the overall industry has just cheapened as time has gone on, and it's just worn thin, and it's just worn out. You know what I'm saying? It just feels worn out, and there's no real life to it. There's no real substance to it, and it's just a lot of trash, you know. I mean, there are some things on that are okay to watch, you know, and worth watching. But like you say, you know, the best things that I can watch are things like The Honeymooners, Isle of Lucy, you know, and Andy Griffith, you know, to name a few, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Keith Thibodeau's here talking about his time on I Love Lucy. Lucille Ball, what was she like?
She was a great actress, and a lot of people think that Lucy was, you know, crazy and funny, and a lot of women, especially, you know, married women with children and husbands, identify with Lucy, you know, they come up to me and say, you know, I'm just like Lucy, you know. And it's funny because in my laugh in myself, and I'm saying, you know, no, you're not really like Lucy, because she really wasn't really like that, you know. And but she was a great actress, and we worked together, you know, of course, on the set, and she was like my mom on the set, and she took care of me, and she made sure that the tech guys and the grips and whatnot that worked on the set were very good with their language around me, and gave me gifts on my birthday, and introduced me to her son and daughter, Desi Jr. and Lucy Jr., and I became great friends with them when I was younger. In our early childhood, we were best of friends, and I was probably one of the only people that they would trust to come over the house. I just remember the summers we spent in Del Mar and at their ranch in Corona and of course, Palm Springs, their home, their different homes. And it was just an interesting life, probably a life that I didn't really want that life, because I saw so much heartache and stuff going on between their marriage, you know, between Desi and Lucy's marriage, and,
sure, yeah.
And so there was a lot of tension, a lot of fighting, a lot of anger, a lot of you know, stuff that really, as kids, it was very frightening, you know, at sometimes.
I understand. Desi Arnaz, you know, we need not say any more about him, his music, his ability, your ability to play the drums. How much fun was it to play the drums and have Desi in the background watching you?
That was fantastic. I mean, Desi was a great guy. You know, he was very down to earth, and he appreciated, you know, musicians, of course, because he was one. And he was really sort of like the stabilizing influence for me on the show, believe it or not. I mean, of course, his alcoholism and stuff began to wear thin on his marriage and his life in general. But in you know, retrospect, he was just a really nice guy who was just a down-to-earth guy from Cuba who appreciated the fact that he came to America and made good, you know.
You know, it's just interesting to hear the behind-the-scenes comments from you, because, you know, you look at television from that era. Again, I mentioned at the start how you can have a bad day, sit down, watch Lucy, laugh, and walk away and forget about your problems. But real life was actually happening behind the scenes. And one of the things that happened behind the scenes was Fred and Ethel, Vivian Vance and Bill Frawley, they really didn't get along well. Is that true?
Well, that's the inference there, that they bickered with one another. And you know, as a kid, it's hard to really, you know, as a five-year-old to nine-year-old is really how old I was. So it was kind of hard for me to understand grown-up stuff, but I could feel those kinds of moments and tension as we were, say, waiting to come on the set, you know, or come on and speak our lines. There was a little back and forth between them and a little bit of tension, but I really did not see a lot of that, maybe because Lucy made sure that there wasn't going to be any stuff, you know, to bad languages to make bad thoughts in my mind and all that, you know.
Sure.
Because Maybe she calmed the whole situation down, but I didn't really see a lot of that. Fred, or I should say William Frawley, Bill was just a good old guy, and Viv was just a good old gal, and they were professional. They did their job. We would meet where the coffee and donuts were, and in the morning, before makeup or whatever, and Fred or Bill would say, how's the world treating you today, Keith? It's just a great day, though, isn't it? And so he was that kind of a old school classic kind of guy, And Viv was a professional and was great in the role. I mean, it was like the whole show was like a puzzle,
Yeah.
It couldn't have been the show that it was without the people that was in the show. The writers, the director, the cameramen, the makeup people. I mean, it was just the perfect scenario for a funny sitcom.
Keith Thibodeau's here, Little Ricky from I Love Lucy, for about another 5 minutes. Why the fascination with the program all these years later? This is a television show that will never go off the air. What do you think? How come it still endures?
I think it just, like I said before, a lot of people identify with it, and it's crazy, it's stupid, but a lot of people are crazy and stupid and silly in their lives. And there's family issues. I want this, but I can't have this, but I'm going to get this type of situations, it just identifies with, it crosses cultures and whatnot, because it's just funny.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It is funny, and thankfully some of the TV channels that are out there, MeTV, TV Land, other ones that still air these types of programs, were able to live on and continue watching them. What about Lucy's family? Keith, do you keep in touch with them at all?
I see and talk with their son Desi and their daughter Lucy. We keep up Facebook type things, and we talk occasionally on the phone, and I see them at a function every once in a while. But we're in three different parts of the land now. She's in Palm Springs, and I think Desi's in Boulder City, Nevada. And but we just live different lives, and we do stay in touch. We will always be able to share those times together that we had as kids, and the fun we had together, and the experiences we had together. We'll always have that, that connection,
Absolutely. Tell us what you're doing today.
I went on after the Out of Lucy show, and my parents were separated, and I began to play in bands and music, and got more into my gifting of playing drums, and I played rock and roll for many, many years, and was into the drugs and all that, and went basically the pathway of child star actors, and was headed for disaster. And at this point in my life, God gave me the grace to believe in Jesus, and I became a Christian, and my life changed, and I began to tell my band about my relationship with God, and they became Christians, and we began to be a Christian rock band in the 80s. I played for a decade, recorded nine albums, then after that, I left and felt God was telling me to put music on the shelf, and my wife is a ballet dancer, and she's a silver medalist in international ballet competition. And she was quite well known in the ballet world, so we had felt that God was leading her to start a Christian ballet company, much like David and the Giants were a Christian band that was formerly a rock band. And we are I'm the executive director, and my wife is the artistic director. We're the founders of Ballet Magnificat, which is a Christian ballet company, America's premier Christian ballet company. It's we have two companies. We have a School of the Arts. We have a trainee program. We have a summer workshop that attracts over 300 students for 2 to 4 weeks, from 11 years old to 25 years old. And I wrote a book called Life After Lucy back in 1994 that was published, and tells my whole story. And we have a daughter who just had a grandson, so we are grandparents for the first time. We are excited about that. She married a former NBA player, Bryce Drew, who's pretty famous for the shot in the big basketball tournament, the college basketball tournament, and played with the Bulls, the Hornets, and the Rockets. And we're just really proud of the fact that we are blessed with a beautiful daughter and son-in-law and grandson, and we just we are blessed. You know, God's been good.
Sounds fantastic. Keith Thibodeau, little Ricky from I Love Lucy, thank you, sir. I really appreciate it. It's been a big kick talking to you.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much, Dana.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that's Keith Thibodeau from I Love Lucy. Nice to sit back and talk about classic TV, because compared to what's on today, there's nothing like those types of programs. My name is Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. And we are right back. Wasn't it nice to hear a nice story about a nice guy and growing up as a child star? And yeah, he had some problems, but he was able to turn those around and found Christianity and is working with the ballet now. And I thought what we'd do is we'd end up the show tonight with a little bit of little Ricky playing the drums. But I also want to thank my guest, Joel Barrows. Judge Joel Barrows and his new book, Deep White Cover, from Crime Street Press, our friend Stacy Dietrich. And go on the link, go on to Amazon, download the Kindle, go buy the book. It's going to be a fascinating series about undercover agent David Ward, ATF's most successful undercover operative. It'll be nice to see those series of books coming. So anyway, that's it. That's tonight's show. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks to Keith Thibodeau and Joel Barrows. And we're going to end out the show with a little bit of Little Ricky playing the drums. And we'll see you again real soon here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
Ricky Ricardo Jr. on his Dixieland Band.
Listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.